Okay, there it goes. And I practiced this today. You're going to be proud of me. Here we go. This is One EMS, The Second Opinion, where I bring somebody on who brings their opinion, and I give that second look at it, and we're going to talk about it. Today's opinion is, it's a different generation out there, and the awesome person who brought that to me is Laverne Hardwick. How are you doing today, Laverne?
Hey, hi.
So let's get you a little something different going. Get you a little something different to kick this one off. But the second opinion, we're definitely talking about something that could have many opinions on it. And in the field of medicine, the field of EMS, we give our opinion on what's going on with the patient and we fix it accordingly. But sometimes we consult with somebody else and say, hey, what do you think about this? So Laverne, you said you wanted to talk about it. It's a different generation out there. What is that? Where are we going with this one today?
I read a lot of articles and a lot of people from my Gen X, greatest generation. they complain about the millennials and the Gen Yers, and the things are not going to change. They're not going to get better. Technology has caused this generation to rely on it so much. But I think we as Gen Xers have to sit back and stop complaining about them so much and help them out.
You know, you would think we would be the generation to do that because – yeah, they're called the greatest generation and the baby boomers and all that. Cause I don't want to say the boomers because that's become like a slur kind of thing. But, you know, our parents and our grandparents, they poo-pooed on us, right? I'm wearing a shirt right now that basically has a tattoo on the sleeve. And you know, man, my grandparents would have hated this shirt, even though it has a collar on it. Mm-hmm. And they crapped on us. Why are we turning around and crapping on a generation instead of dealing with people?
It happens that, I mean, that's a tradition, right? Generation after generation, every generation, even my mother says, when I was, you know, so we all do that. We all do that. We all think that we were better. Better or worse, we're different. We're very different.
Yes.
Our generation had to, if nothing else, resilience, because our parents worked.
And they were latchkey kids, right?
Right. They weren't home when we got home because they had to work. So we were responsible for ourselves, you know. We still went outside and played. We didn't have phones and video games and all that other stuff. And this generation does have that. I mean, there's some good, some bad, some indifferent with that. But when it comes to our industry, that part is where it gets kind of iffy, because the first time I came up through EMS in the 90s, it was a strict discipline. You know, you did it this way and this is what was done.
It was very military-esque.
Very, very military-esque. And revisiting that in the 2000s, when I left and came back into the industry, it was a lot similar to that. Again, it's all contingent upon you, who you had as your instructors and who you had as your supervisors and colleagues. But it was still sort of military-esque. It was the military part was kind of dwindling and fading away, but there was still order and discipline. You know, there was no failure. There was no willingness to bow out gracefully. This is what you said you wanted to do, and we are going to get you where you need to be, but you have to be resilient in it. You can't just let it knock you off the horse and then you run away and quit. And that's the difference.
You know, whose fault is that? I mean, why do you think that difference is?
I think we, as a generation of parents, and now we're becoming our parents, we worked hard so that our kids wouldn't have to.
Yeah.
You know? So, but not everyone has done that. There are some parents out there that still made their kids earn some things, but no child gets left behind. I think no child left behind is, I say it, am I saying it right?
Yeah, no child left behind. Yeah, that was Bush Senior.
So everybody gets included. Well, not everybody needs to be included, or not everybody. I'm not saying exclude anybody. I'm not saying exclude anybody, but
earn it is what you're saying. Work for everywhere. It.
Work for it. Yes. Yeah. You know, nepotism and entitlement, those things are running rampant in this industry, you know, and that part. Everything's a shaming, body shaming, hair shaming, culture shaming. Everything's a shaming when you give your opinion or you give somebody advice on something. Or everybody's judging you when they give advice or they make an opinion on something.
Are you telling them they're wrong?
Yeah, you can't tell them they're wrong because now you're judging me or you're being mean to me. No, I'm telling you the fact. You are going to trip over yourself if you do not tie your shoes.
Yeah.
You are going to kill someone if you take your time and don't act with a sense of urgency. You know,
time is muscle, right?
Exactly.
This is not an opinion on how maybe we should help save a life. This is science, and science is not open to, well, you know, I think if I try it this way, it'll be better. Okay, that's not even true too, right? Because science does have different ways to solve the same issue. But, right. You know, that whole idea of, so I heard about somebody the other day who ended up walking out of a company because they were saying, well, you know, you can't, some males were basically doing rude male things. And the female mm-hmm. was like, you know, you can't do that. And got support and said, no, that's absolutely right. You guys need to, it's a workplace. You need to tone it down. You can't, you know, this is going too far. But that same female turned around and talked about certain products that she wanted to get for her wife and why, and like, wait, you can't do that either. That's just as bad. And then they got offended. And then when somebody made a joke at their expense, then they walked out. And then 2 days later, wanted to come back to work and like, wait, why am I off the schedule? Am I fired? It's like, you literally walked off the job mid shift. But it was a double standard. And then they're like, well, you can't talk this way, but I can. And that is an issue that has been in EMS. And actually probably in the world, but we're going to focus on the industry of EMS. I remember coming up and not being able to grow any facial hair because males had to have short cut hair and no piercings and no facial hair, but females could have the long hair, but pulled up, they could have one earring per ear and this and that and the other. And it was an imbalance in everything. And I remember the old guys just give me so much grief for talking to a patient differently than they would have, or connecting with somebody differently. And that almost ran me off.
Mm-hmm. And I get
you stuck through it. Yeah.
Yeah, I get that part. And those are things, you know, that there has to be equity in that. But also in the interest of what we do is the appearance. We had that discussion at a conference when someone said, you know, talked about appearances. There is that stiff appearance. And I get that part. And it doesn't necessarily have to be that, but you still need to appear like you're ready for work. I mean,
I agree.
As long as your uniform is neat and pressed, you're not disheveled, you can have some variations to that, I believe. Now, though, I sat in the ED the other day watching crews come in and out, and the variances and the things that I saw. Now, when I worked in EMS, you couldn't blouse your boots in your pants. You had to have your pants over your boot. Shirt tucked in, you know, belt
yep,
on,
yep.
Groomed, well-groomed, you know, and that was a thing. Young ladies came in with their hair literally all the way down to their belt line. And for safety reasons, to me, that's always been a thing. Sure. Anytime you see me, my hair is usually always up. Even now, I'm in such a habit of doing that. I wear it down sometime, but if I was on a rig, and the styles that they wear now with the long braids or the long flowy hair. And, well, there's too many germs out there. People spit at you. And your hair's getting in it. And then you're taking your glove and you're going like this with your hair. So now all that's on your hair. And that just totally, I don't know, maybe it doesn't gross them out, but it grosses me out. So, I mean, there are some things that are still appropriate, but because everything has become a shaming thing, or everything is because I can do what I want, when I want, how I want. Where's the order to it? You know, where's the order and discipline to it?
You know, the quote a friend of ours, Tom Campain, he's like, man, you know, he uses that phrase, it's a different generation out there. You got to treat them differently. And I fully disagree. I 100% disagree. I took a hard stance when I was at the school. I take a hard stance in the companies that I work with. And I'm like, no, I will treat you the same as everybody else. In the school, it was, you said you want to be an EMT. I am telling you, that is my only focus. It is fine that, you know, you're breaking up with your boyfriend or girlfriend or whoever. It is fine that your mom is dying. It's fine. Those are human factors. But when those tones drop, the tones do not discriminate. They do not care about your religion, your orientation, your skin color. They don't care. Those tones drop and somebody else's person is dying. But you volunteer to do this job. Like you said, I want to do this job. You got to respond. you have decisions to make. So in this schooling and in the companies I run, it is very much, you said you wanted to do this job. This is what the job requires, and I'm going to expect you to step up to it. But I don't make arbitrary rules. You know, we had a young lady who had blue hair, and she's like, well, can I have blue hair? It's like, you know what? Let's find out. Because we deal with, my company deals with the senior citizen population. I'm like, well, you know, they may really, if it's going to be a problem, then we can fix the problem. And so she ended up being on the ambulance. There we go. She ended up being on the ambulance, and the old ladies loved it. They complimented, oh, your hair is so pretty, this, that, and the other. So it wasn't a problem. Right. But to say that had a guy who, you're talking about disheveled, right? So that's the thing. She had blonde hair with a nice, very intentional blue streak in it. Very well done. Well put together. Then I had a guy who always was like clean shaven, and this, but he was overweight, but he was slobby. He just, his shirt never fit right. He never presented as ready to work. And one of the hardest workers we had, and every patient hated him because you talked about that disheveled. And I think it kind of goes into carrying yourself. I think possibly this next generation that's coming into EMS now, they have not been taught to take pride in yourself and be proud in what you do. It is about feelings. And anytime they feel negative, they respond. How do we overcome that?
I honestly couldn't tell you. You know, psychologists say don't yell at children, don't scream to our people or that kind of thing. Hey, but sometimes you got to get your point across. How do you get your point across? When you say it over and over and over again and the people are not listening. What other methods can you use to get your point across? I was in a meeting and we were talking, and one of the senior staff members said something along the lines of, we are the mentors, the counselors, and we have to work with these students. And I totally told her, I am not a licensed clinical therapist. I have not been trained to deal with people in that have mental crises. And my training is a blurb of a paragraph in a textbook in my years of experience and my years in life on how to deal with people. But there's a way that you clinically deal with people. There's a way that I deal with things, and there's a way that the clinician would recommend that we deal
right.
with. And I'm not that. So, and she says, well, we're all humans and we should, you can't say that we're all humans and we should, because we all don't think the same way.
Yeah, shoulda, woulda, coulda, don't work here.
It does not. So if we're going to have to deal with the kids and their ways of thinking and their ways of doing, or their lack of discipline or whatever else is going on that's causing all of these differences, well, then we all need to be retrained on how to do it.
That's a very good thing that you brought up there about being retrained. Sure, yelling and screaming probably isn't effective, but and you're like, well, you're at the end of your rope. How many times do you do it? I've tried direct confrontation, but away from work. It's not about my direct confrontation is not about necessarily it starts with, hey, this is the line. Did you step up to the line? Well, case in point, young people had stuff going on in their lives, and I get it. I remember being there, and the conflict with my wife, and or you know, the issue with my young children was forefront and the loudest thing to me. And I had to learn the hard way. Life goes on. And so I took that mentorship to be, now I'm not a licensed clinician either. So the first thing I say is, one, everybody needs to be retaught. Every human being needs to be retaught. It's okay to feel the way you feel. If you feel angry, if you feel happy, if you feel whatever, you feel judged, own that for a second. But facts don't have feelings. So we start with the facts of, this is what I need you to do. And then I actually will pivot over into I'm going to use you as an example. Obviously, this was not a real example, but Laverne, look, we'll talk about what we expect you to do here at work later. You've got to get your life in order. This whole, you know, your spouse is taking you down and it's distracting you. No job's going to be able to put up with that. Are you asking me to look at that patient and say, I'm sorry, you're going to die in a week because he can't get his life together? You can't, Laverne, get your life together right now. So either you got to get it together because you chose to be here. that person did not choose to have renal failure. That person did not choose to have the emergency on 911 right now.
Right.
And what you're asking, what I'm just, without going into, you know, obviously you get the point. So I'm not going to belabor it, but it's like I break down the facts of here's what your actions are doing. And when you're off work, fix it. Anything I can do to help you with that, I'll give you my advice. For me, being a male, a dad, I come from that perspective of I'll give you some fatherly advice. I'll give you some big brother advice. I'll just give you some advice of what worked for me. But nobody taught me to get past the negative. I had to learn it the hard way. And what you're talking about is when we feel judged, I was leaned into that so hard as a paramedic. And there was this one nurse that I just did not get along with at this hospital. And she just kind of lit me up. And it was late at night, and I called dispatch to get my numbers and was just BSing. It was like, yo, didn't realize she was right there behind me. I'm on the EMS phone. Yeah, hey kids, back in the day, we had to pick up a phone off a wall and dial a number.
Right.
Yeah. And I was on, I was getting, and I turned around, I'm like, I thought we were going to have a fight, and I hung up, and she's like, look, I was here to make you better. I thought you cared. I thought you were worth putting some investment in, and I don't even remember what I did wrong, but I did wrong. So here's, you did, and she hit me with the facts, X, Y, Z, and I thought me giving you this time and energy and telling you what you did wrong would help you. But if that's not the case, I'm not going to bother. And I felt, my feelings kicked in there, but I felt so little and so wrong in that moment going, oh, I didn't realize you were helping me. I got into, I'm right and my feelings are right. And that's not the thing, right? We can't let, and it's on us. Laverne is on us, Tom, if you're listening. It's on us, the generation that's leading right now, to help them learn through this. And we've got to combat all the noise in their heads that says, you mentioned nepotism. Oh, no, don't worry about it. Your daddy works there. Your uncle works there. Your mama works there. Oh, don't worry about it. You know, baby, the world is just mean place. You'll find that whole don't worry about it is no, it should be, hey, if you're not getting the results you want, figure out why. Is it because that's a horrible place to be and they're always going to treat you like crap? Or is it maybe you need to get your life together and go, I don't know everything. Let me learn.
Yeah. But they have to understand that they don't know everything. One thing that irritates me is when you ask someone to do something or you suggest something and they go, I don't know how to do that. And my response is always, when you were born, did you know how to drive? No.
Exactly.
You had to learn how to drive. So if I tell you to open up this program and use it, guess what? You have to learn to use it. Play with it. You cannot break it. So try it. Try to use this. I don't know how to do that. I know you don't. That's why you're here to learn.
Exactly.
I don't expect you to do what I do the way that I do it. What I expect you to do is see what I'm doing, develop a fundamental understanding of it, and then fine tune it your way, but stay within the parameters of what has to be done. And they just, or one of the things I see that we were taught to, whatever's in your head, if someone's evaluating you, whatever's in your head, you have to articulate, because I can't see what's in your head. You might know this top to bottom, inside, outside, all the way around. You might know that, but I don't know that you know that because you did not articulate it. And so when they're unsuccessful, well, why was I unsuccessful? Well, I did this, this, and this, and this. I didn't hear you say it, and I didn't see you do it. But I did it in your head.
Yeah.
Articulate that. And that's another thing. They have difficulty articulating, speaking, and thinking and doing at the same time. You know, and again, these are things now that they're becoming adults. How do we retrain adults? Because they're not kids. We say kids. I say kids all the time. I've got
right.
Students that range from the low 20s to up here with me in the 50s. And they're not kids. Well, they're kids in the program, yeah, because they're just learning. But
realistically,
they're not kids. Because the first thing they'll say to you when you try to correct them is, I'm grown. Yes, you are. And therefore, I'm going to treat you as such. You are not a child. And then when I begin to treat them as grown, then you're offended. You want to report me because I'm too harsh, I'm too direct, I'm too difficult. Really? But did I say anything wrong to you? Did anything I say, is there anything that was in the verbiage that I used that was incorrect? It's just the way you say things.
And?
I am who I am. You're mean. You're unhappy. I'm not. I'm direct. I'm straightforward. I will take you through the fire all the way to the end with you. But you're going to walk next to me. I'm not going to hold your hand and pull you through it. Because if I can still walk through that fire at my age, you certainly can walk through it right next to me. Mm-hmm. Be better than me. Don't be like me. Be better than me.
You know? I always try to bring it down to choice. And that's all I hear you saying there is in those moments where you're mean, you're unhappy. You have a choice. Because my first answer is, and then? You know who else is mean and unhappy? Not that you're mean or unhappy, Laverne. But you know who else is mean and unhappy? That person who got shot and is wanting to shoot back with you in the way. That these are real stories I'm recounting here. That mother that I'm trying to do CPR and she's tackling me because it's her baby and she's freaking out. That deer camp where this dude is dying and his drunk wife keeps trying to throw a blanket on him. And I have to say, look, I need you to stop. I'm trying to save his life. And they go for their rifles because I disrespected her. That's mean and unhappy. And guess what? All those situations I had to do and I had to know how to survive and live through it. So it doesn't matter if I'm mean and happy. It didn't matter that they were drunk and doing the wrong thing. It didn't matter they were overreacting to their child who was 30 and overdosing on drugs. And I'm trying to save their life. It didn't matter that mean and unhappy cast. I was there to save a life. And I have to know how to interact with it. So what matters is what you do right now, the choice you make. You can either sit in your feelings and be unhappy and be like, meh, and report me. And where are you going to get? Are you going to make progress? Does it feel inside yourself that you're moving forward? Or are you just going to sit here and be all cranky and mad and I can't treat you like a child or an adult because you're not moving?
Right.
And I know you're stuck in a situation where we have different freedoms. And in my freedom, I get to say whatever I want to whoever I want. And I might get a slap on the wrist by HR going, well, you know, I'm never intending to make a hostile workplace. But I've literally said to somebody, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Or you can't say that. It's like, no, I can because you did. Because here's why it's dumb. And I can break it down factually. And here's 15 ways that you could have stopped what you just said before you said it. And I know in your case, in the different places that you operate, you don't always have that freedom to just look somebody in the eye and go, that's the dumbest. How dumb is it to say I'm mean and unhappy? What good did it do? What progress did it make?
What's funny about that is that I often, and in my aged wisdom, I've learned not to say a lot. But here's what my admin tells me all the time. She said, it's not what you say, it's the way you look at people.
Why does that matter?
Apparently, the way that I look at people says everything that you just said. So in a meeting, I can't say, well, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. But when you say something stupid, I just go.
Okay, yeah.
I've got this look. She literally mimicked me and pointed them all out. She said, and then when your head drops aside, like.
I can fortunately say I've never seen that face till today.
Because you and I have not interacted that way.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's like, so and my thing is, even with my supervisors, because obviously I've got someone that supervises me and I give them a look. And some years ago when I was still on the street, I had a supervisor say something to me and about me being visibly upset on a scene. Well, how was I visibly upset? I didn't say anything. And so he said, no, it was just the look on your face. And I'm like, which one? This one? And he said, yeah, that one right there. I said, well, go ahead and get your pen and paper, write me up for it, and I want you to describe in detail what that look says.
Yeah. You know,
I'm hungry. It could say, well, this is how I am when I'm hungry. You know, like, you can't write me up for a look on my face, or you can't judge a look on my face because you don't know what that look means. Only I know what that look means.
Yeah. So. Well, no, and I guarantee you, they were right though, weren't they? They knew what that look meant. They just can't prove it.
I plead the fifth on that. I'll plead the fifth on that. you know, or when someone's talking and talking, and the more they talk, the sillier they sound. I just shut down and I go, I just start looking, and I let them get it all out. You know, are you okay with what you just said?
Yeah. Well, let's tackle that. Let's tackle that right there. You're talking about it's a different generation out there, right? So that kind of points the focus on the new kids and this and that, and the other, and how we have to talk differently to. And I think the truth of the universe is everything's backwards, right? What do we teach in EMS? Scene safety, PP means take care of yourself first, which means do your thing first. As EMTs were taught, yeah, you're going to have a team, but you got to be able to solve this yourself. And yet we don't believe it. And you want to talk about that person that when you're on scene, giving the face and they're like, well, you are visibly upset. They're not changing their mindset. They're forcing their way just as much as that new generation is forcing their way. Oh, I have my feelings hurt. I'm sorry. What did that supervisor just say to you? Oh, I had my feelings hurt because you looked at me because I said something and I know you think I'm wrong. And I know you think you're upset with me. And I know, and you hear the tone. It's going into temper tantrum time.
Exactly.
And we've got to change our minds. Everything comes down to personal responsibility in my world.
And that's what we lack. And that's what it lacks, because people want to do something. And it's not just this generation, because
it's every human being in the world.
Correct. We want things our way. And when they don't work our way, or when we've done something, we don't want to take ownership and responsibility. And there was a time where some people felt extreme ownership. Well, extreme ownership is just that. It's extreme. I'm going to take ownership of what I can take ownership of. And I'm not going to throw you under the bus because of something. But if we're working as a team, I don't have extreme ownership because we were working as a team. So I'm not going to take it all. I'm not going to take the complete hit because we collectively made a bad choice. Or we collectively did something that was incorrect or caused some sort of detriment. But what I will take is ownership of the part that I played in it. Did I fail to give you this? Did I fail to tell you that? Did I tell you something that was incorrect? I will own that. But the problem is, here's how that works now. Conversely, when, you know, we speak and we say things, and sometimes you can say things out of turn or say things improperly, people will pick up on what you said that was incorrect. And they continue to perpetuate that incorrect. Well, you said this, but I also came back and corrected it.
Yeah.
But you said. But I corrected it and I own the fact that I said it wrong. Well, now I'm confused. What is it that you're confused about? I said it this way and then I realized that was incorrect. I came back and corrected it. So where's
who's holding on to the problem?
And I get that a lot. I'm confused. What is it that you're confused about? Please clarify. And then what ends up happening is they can't even tell me what they're confused about.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that part is like, womp, womp, womp.
Yeah, you know, I can use my son as an example. I have he's going to be 12 in a month or so, month and a half or so. And he had that preteen moment where he was resisting. And I kept saying, that's on you, man. We've proven over and over again, you can do this. We're sitting here, you're refusing to do, it wasn't this, but I can't remember what it was, but it was a simple problem. So you're refusing to do 2 + 2. You are refusing. You are holding on to some thing that you think is a drama and you want to do it instead of just going to the good feeling and getting it done. Mm-hmm. And you're causing this problem. And he got to my, there was tears. I was like, just go cry it out. And he went and he was screaming in his room. But no, I went in and I got a little heated, but I went in and I was like, no, this is too much. I was going to let you cry out thinking you can get past the pent up emotions, but you're screaming. He goes, well, you think I should know everything. I'm like, no, you moron. I did. I called him more. I'm like, no, you moron. I didn't say you needed to know the math. That's exactly what I'm here to help you with. Now, of course you don't know it, dummy. That's why you're learning it. What I am mad about, what you're holding on to, is you're resisting because you want to feel this way. How does this feel good? You're getting nothing done. I'm going to make you sit at this table for 4 hours until it is done. And now, again, it's my kid. You know, we don't have that with students. We don't have that with EMTs and with partners and employees. But the whole point was I was real hard on him. And then once he calmed down, I was like, your resistance is the problem. You holding on, going back to your example, you're holding on to, I'm confused. Let it go. Stop saying I'm confused. Change your words. Will change your life. Change your words to, okay, help me understand. That's the flip side of I'm confused. And then you just erase everything that got you confused. You went, okay, all right, whatever. Whatever I held on to before, I can let go of. And as a human society, we don't want to do that. We're not taught that. We're taught guilt. We're taught it's your fault. I hate the word fault. Fault really is a weakness in a structure. It is a breaking point. Like, and how can I... Exactly. How can I have a fault for doing something? That's not fault, right? But we hold on to that. So when we go, oh, I got it wrong, all that negative emotion starts kicking in. And so to a point, I get what that person was saying to you, Laverne, about saying, we're the mentors, we're the therapists, we're the coaches. Well, no, I can't fix everything in their life, but I can go, hey, let's bring it down to here. I'm here to make you a better person. Do we agree on that? It's almost like a sales tactic. Laverne, do we agree? You're here because you want to be here.
Right.
Thank you, Laverne. And this, we're going to have to engage here. That's what, you're right. So it's not one sided thing. You're here because you want to be here.
I'm supposed to be here.
All right, cool. We're on the same page. I think you're going to fit the need that we have here. Mm-hmm. So what's the real issue here? Are you confused? How can we fix the issue? You tell me where I can get you. And if you don't know, well, here, let me show you something new. No, we're not going to go back to old things. We're not going to go back to how I said it before. We're here right now. Right now, we can solve the world's problems. And I think that's personally a fault. See what I did there? That's a fault that I do see in the structure of EMS, where we lean on phrases. We lean on, well, kids today just don't understand. You know where that phrase came from? Kids today just don't understand. Sounds a little familiar, doesn't it?
Will Smith.
Will Smith in the 90s when we were growing up. And his parents don't just understand, mm-hmm. right? But we flipped it now.
But it was our generation that said parents don't understand. So now we're turning around and saying kids don't understand.
That you got it.
That's funny.
You got it.
That's funny. Yeah, but I don't know. I'm learning every day that I learn, because there's no groupthink. And groupthink in the past, to me, groupthink was labeled as a bad thing. You know, groupthink ends up like, if you don't think for
yourself, you just adopt it. Right.
If you compare it like to the different political climates over generations, groupthink led to things that happened in World War I and World War II and current day groupthink, right? You got a group of people that think this way, a group of people that think that way, because someone told them to think that way. But groupthink is not always bad, because now the polar opposite is that is individualism. So we've got so much individualism, we can't have consistency. Everybody wants to be an individual. I dress the way that I want to dress. I do my hair the way that I want to do my hair. I do this how I want to do it. Yeah, but it's called standardization. And in our industry, there is a thing called, we have to have standardization of things. And whether it's behaviors with affective domains or that's my take on to my Tom Kim playing the affective. And so we have to have that, right? And that this individualism makes it difficult. In our world, we have to learn how to work in groups. In every class I've ever taught, every class I've ever been in, there's always at the level that I'm at now, there's always a group breakout session where the groups have to get together and develop some sort of synergy so that they can get the task or the project done. And that's a struggle nowadays.
Of course.
Because everybody's train of thinking is so different, and they focus on the differences in their thinking that they can't come together and say, let's put all 12 things on the table and just start cross-referencing, because there's something in those things that the eight of us or whatever have in common. So bullet point number one, person 1 through 4, we all like that. Well, person 4 through 8. So let's put it together and try to figure out what we have in common, as opposed to focusing on being out there an army of one, so to speak, because you're never going to be that.
It's that, and again, it's human nature, right? It's I think back to my EMT and my paramedic class and some of the people I was in the class with, and I go, nope, this guy is an asshat. He thinks opposite of me. I hate him, right? This person is just weak-minded. I don't like them. This person over here asks the dumb questions every single time, you know, but it was, and that's, I was 19, 20 when I went to EMT school. I was in my early 20s when I went to paramedic school, you know, but that's, it's the only different today, because of the journey I've taken through my life and the people who invested their time in me to say, get what you want. And that's the difference is, well, in my class, I didn't have to work with them. It was, we didn't really fight because I don't really care about you. I'm here to get my EMT. I'm here to get my paramedic and move on. And I ended up working with the asshat at one point, and then we actually found some common ground. But we were the powerhouses of the class with my mouth and his mouth. I mean, there was just nobody wanted to get in between us. We'd spout off.
Isn't that funny? Like, it's funny that when you go to EMT school or you start out at EMT school and then fast forward throughout your career, the very same people who you had those opinions about.
Yeah.
When they see you later on in life, it's like, you did that? Or you end up getting your assignment and you get in your truck one morning and you look over to your right or you look over to your left and it's that person.
Yeah.
And you're like, for me, it was always, it was the problematic students. Right. It was the ones that always wanted to cause a ruckus. And I tell students now, I'm still in the game. I might not be out there on the street, but I'm still in the game. And so like current day, when they walk into the hospital and they see me standing there, it's like, now that report, or they'll call on the phone and I recognize the voice or the caller ID. And then I'll, you know, okay, Mr. Jones, now tell me this, 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 and this, and this, because, you know, I work in pediatrics. So vitals are very, very, you know, they're very important. And they go, and all of a sudden the tone changes. that half-ass report you were about to give changes.
Yeah.
And then they get it right. And then they walk in the door. You know, and same things when I was on the truck. I had one student who, I'm going to be honest with you, I hated him. And I shouldn't hate anybody. But I really didn't. I had a very, how do I say this? I had a powerful discord for this person. How's that? That sound better? Sure.
That sounds good.
And he got in the truck. You know, I'm riding seat. He's driving EMT. And he goes, I'm so happy that you're, oh my God, I'm working with you. Oh my God, I'm working with you. I'm going to pick your brain and challenge you all day. And my response was, this is Laverne on the truck, not Miss Hardwick. Those are two different people. So all of that, the words you use, asshat stuff that you did, in class, mm-hmm. You gonna get the Laverne answer today. Today, yes,
yeah,
yes, you're gonna get that today. And it's just funny to see how that happens, and to see how when you do get someone like that, if you're successful, you can kind of see that shift in their mindset. And then there are those who are gonna keep that same mindset, who are gonna get stuck in the abyss of confusion.
Yeah. The one of the hardest things, somebody just liked your comment on that. One of the hardest things that I think we got to get past is, what does that say about us, right? It's, what was it about that student that gave you that vehement dislike of them to then, you know, I don't know if it changed later or not. I mean, there's a few people that I would have in my life that's like, no, you're an enemy. You know, there's very, very few. But I can look back at, there's an employee now that I have that he's been with me since he got out of school. And man, there was just things that I just smashed. We just, you know, I literally taught his school, you know, interacted with him as a human being, then went on to do this company. Then when he graduated and got his numbers, hired him on, and just, we just smashed a lot. And now he is literally one of the strongest people I have. He's the future of this company. And, you know, I use him as a good example, and our interactions as an example all the time. And I have to ask myself, what was it about him that triggered me to go, yeah, no, I don't like you. You know, you're pissing me off. No, you know, what was it in my situation of life that I was dealing with that he was triggering? Now, we both made changes. That's the thing. when it comes down to, it's a different generation out there. Is it though? Is it? Are, yeah, maybe they're presenting with different ways than you presented, but I can go back to my Gen X EFT class and tell you some of the things I said to the instructor that made them want to strangle me, that made them say some horrible things back to me, and I wanted to prove them wrong, you know? And I did, and I was successful, and that person went on to run other programs that he shut me out of. He never wanted to work with me. But yet here I am now running my own successful company and making a difference in the field. Am I that 18, 19, whatever year old? That no, I have definitely learned. I definitely can go back and say, no, I was a little dumb. I was very full of myself, which is partially what makes you a good paramedic to start with. But, you know, if it's somebody who won't listen, that to me is like, I don't get mad at you. It's just, I'm going to stop talking to you. You know, if you're not going to listen to me, and I love how you do. There's an instructor, and I've said that there's an instructor version of me. The boss version of me is different. The hey, if we're on the phone, just talking version of me. And it's not because I'm a different person in those realms. I have different responsibilities and interactions with you. Brian Haney says it best. He talking about working with employees, like, hey, no, we can go out and have a drink after this, but this is work right now. This is not buddy buddy. This is. Get past your feelings and start getting to these things that have to be done. And then when we clock out and everything's done, I'll listen. No, I get why you're upset. I get why you're mad or this and that, and the other, but those are two different times. Maybe not two different people, definitely two different times. So how do we as the leaders in this industry effectively change that on our level? Because I know I'm gonna throw this out to you. I know you're gonna think of three people at least that you cannot talk about that is going to trigger in your mind of somebody who's like, no, that person's stuck in their ways, they're old-minded, and they will never reach a new generation. And you can't say the names, but how do we change that? Because that I think is the issue, part of the issue we've talked about for the first half of the show easily. How we can engage with the next generation, how we believe, how I believe, you know, we don't change ourselves. I mean, we do, but I'm not, okay, I got to talk to Alan differently. I talk to Bob. No, I'm going to, well, yes, but no, because everybody's individual. I'm going to still bring me to every conversation.
Right.
And my whole goal is let's find a common ground. And you touched on that, that people aren't finding that common ground, but neither are our leaders. Neither are is that person that you just thought of that are stuck in their ways. How do we get them to see, once they start seeing there's common ground, this next generation sees there's common ground, and now we're actually making progress? How do we do that, Laverne?
God, I don't know. If I knew the answer to that, geez, I wouldn't have to get up and go to work tonight.
Because you'd be a millionaire consultant and changing the world.
I don't know. You just have to want to change your mindset. Like, I mean, I know that, like, I'm somewhere in the middle when it comes to the age group. I'm not too old for this, but I'm not too young for that. And I am learning as I grow older, because I pride myself on being a lifelong learner. I'm learning how to deal with younger people. You know, I'm learning things from, let's say, my nieces and nephews. I'm learning things from being around young. And I'm talking about 19, 20-year-olds. And that sometimes exhausts me, but I was 19 or 20 myself at one point, and I remind myself of that. So I listen and I think, and I try to learn some stuff from them and just kind of implement, because what I realize is that they're not going back to my way. We're going to their way. So
yeah,
we have to be willing to work with it. However, I'm not willing to compromise everything. There's some things that I just stand firm on, and this is what it's going to be. This is how it's going to be. A funny thing, I had a student tell me, you know, in paramedic school, you do a whole part-time job and a full-time job in clinicals. It's a whole full-time job.
Yeah.
Do clinical rotations. And we had some challenges. And this student sent to me a message that said that he is bending over backwards to accommodate the clinical schedule. He's bending over backwards.
Okay.
And I need to understand that. I won't say everything that I said. I said it professionally, but nonetheless, sure. I had it.
Which had your face on, didn't you?
Yeah. It's an electronic notification. And I'm thinking to myself, you have no idea. you're not doing me any favors, because as long as I renew every two, I don't have to do what you're doing. You're trying to get where I am. I am trying to get you there expeditiously, properly, within the guidelines. And you're doing me a favor? Wow. Entitlement. That entitlement piece.
And that, I would like to tackle that slightly. Yeah. Because there are definitely people who are entitled and they do not make it through a program, right? But I think there is a mindset that we do call entitlement that really is their reality. Somewhere, we're all taught, right? So they're taught this is that. And when I say the voice, I always use the puppet hands, the voices in people's heads and in their ears. I'm going to give a real example of how I finally found a solution. So I didn't change their whole life. They still have their issues out there. They're not always the best employee, but they got their EMT. And it was at Tom's school. And Tom was coming from that standpoint. They're both kind of clashing. Well, you need to accommodate me. You don't understand. And I was literally in the middle of this triangle. And I went, let's change this conversation for a second. What is it that you got going on? What is it that you think the solution to the student? You know, what is the solution? That's when they finally said they're dyslexic and had the paperwork to prove it. Like, why didn't you tell us that before? Well, I'm ashamed. I'm this and that. Well, that's a problem that we can help you with. To Tom's mindset of that resist, it was all resistance. It was all resistance. Oh, you know, because Tom was right. Now you paid us. We're literally trying to get you to school. It's our rules. It's our house. Uh-huh. Well, this person literally had somebody in the ear saying, well, they're treating you wrong. They need to be doing it. We didn't have the information. You were dyslexic. Once we had it, it does change the ball game. Number two is you need to stop listening to people who aren't here to get your schooling. They're not getting your EMT. They're not going to live your life and pay your bills and pick you up, you know, when you there's no else around to pick you up. You're going to pick yourself up. And so working with this guy, it took a lot longer, and it's a whole very stylized program for him because his brain worked differently. Then even after he graduated, he and I worked together hours at a time to get him to understand how to break down the questions for his own thing. But once he got past the people outside going, and we do it too, right? Mm-hmm. It's easy for us to go to a conference instead of a table of people our age with our experiences and go, kids these days. And we don't really say kids these days. That's just a silly thing. But, you know, that whole kids eat, and we'll commiserate. Mm-hmm. But in the real moment is, I find that resetting the conversation helps. Okay, that student. Well, you got to understand that I'm bending over backwards, and I'm sure you handled it professionally and appropriately, and I don't have any other details. I don't know what else led into it, but perhaps if you had the moment to sit down and say, okay, what do you want out of this? You want to be a paramedic. Okay. I'm a specialist, period. I am only here to get you paramedic. You don't go to McDonald's and order pizza. You don't go to fill in the gap, you know, whatever place and ask for this thing that they don't. You don't go to a mechanic and ask them to do dental work on you, right? I'm a specialist. You want this. How can I help you get to that? And I think that's helped me in some of my leadership skills and some of my teaching skills of going, let's reset this. What do you want? As a parent, even, because I was ready. I told the story about my kids. I went hot and, you know, I was like, this is if I'm yelling at him a little bit, but that brought it back because I knew it wasn't helpful. And it's like, you want to get to your talent time, right? You want to get to your free time to do what you want. You want to get to a place where you feel better. Mm-hmm. I want that too. I don't want to come home from work and sit here for 3 hours fighting with you over this homeschooling that you've proven you can do in an hour. He's not even going to school for 8 hours and then coming home with 6 hours of homework. This is homeschool. And he it helped reset. It doesn't always work. Right. But how, you know, when you're talking about your a supervisor writing you up for the face, I wouldn't then. I would have done the same thing you did. I would have been like, no, I play chess when you're playing Russian roulette, dude, and roulette, whatever. And you're trying to pull the trigger and I'm moving pieces. Write me up. You can't prove my face is what you say it is. But if I really wanted to work with that supervisor today, I'd be like, what do you want on the scene? We're going to disagree. That's a fact of life. Mm-hmm. Do you want to pull rank on the scene? I will follow you all day long and let's see how that works out. Or you want to trust me to use my patch, my skills, and my brain that you hired to let me run that scene. That's and it. We can make that call per scene. you know, and but that's conversations we're not having. You and I can have this right now, and I have it some limited in my companies, but that's not a conversation that we're having every day.
Yeah. One of the things I do notice, though, is doing what we do as, and I'm just going to say on the paramedic level, or even at CMT level for that matter, too, is challenging. And a lot of people that I'm coming across have never been challenged.
Yes. And it's up to us to teach them that a challenge makes us stronger. It's not right. You're guilty for not knowing something. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No. I was going to say, yeah, you're absolutely right. Your challenges make you stronger because you learn from them. What ended up happening out of that conversation, we ended up doing our one-on-ones, and I ended up explaining to him. I said, you know, you talk about a kid who, smart kid, graduated with an engineering degree and, you know, decided he wanted to do something different. So he came over to my department and started working there. Smart kid. I mean, could probably just on the premise of knowing how to study and take a test, pass his registry with just the little pieces of the medical piece put in there. He's one of those people.
Sure.
So you're great at the textbook, but it's the practical application. See, I'm not a book medic. I am a practical application. I can never read a book on something, but I can watch you do it and then pick it up and then go back and put the pieces of what I read into the pieces that I've actually done. Because I'm tactile, right? And sure. So I explained to him, I said, one thing you'll learn, I said, no matter how smart you are, you can be the most intelligent person ever. But one thing that's going to knock you down is humility. And you better take some of that arrogance, learn how to shave off the arrogance, move it down to being confident. But you better add all of that arrogance you got on there, you better shave that off and put humility in that place. Because I know people who were so confident, so arrogant, so I got this and I'm doing this, this and this. And this is a kid that still lives at home with his parents. So who has never had to have challenges.
No struggle, right?
No struggle. So you don't know. I said, but I've had people to be Billy Badass in this industry in their mindset. And then they get that one call. And after that shift, they never come back. And you know why? Yeah. They never develop the humility that it takes to do this. Humility brings you back to work the next day and the next day and the next day and the next year. Arrogance will cause you to walk away from something you probably love doing, but because you're so arrogant and you've got to be right. And this situation, this industry is imperfect, but your arrogance wants perfection because you view yourself as I'm right. I'm super medic. I'm perfect. And when when arrogance and perfection meets imperfection, they clash.
Hashtag reality.
Right. Hashtag reality. And then what happens? Your lack of humility causes you to lose. So.
You know, I think the bigger problem with that is, okay, you're having that conversation and I'm thinking, what does that look like? You know, back in my old days, I was that medic. I would get a new EMT and say, you will never beat me to the truck. You'll never outperform me. And then came a day when life hit me. And no matter how I performed, nothing went right. The call just went bad and the patient died. And it wrecked me and it threw me off my game so hard. And that's where the next step of that conversation we're not having is, I think even in trying to build humility, we turn that into, it's too easy to turn that into, well, I can't, and a fear-based thing, and I can't, and it holds us back. I think the real words are, what is best for the situation? You're talking about that book medic, that arrogant person. I'm thinking of somebody that we might both know. I'm not going to call him out here, but he was very good on the medicine, zero bedside manner, and most of the situations that he and I butted heads on, so we were partners. I was the medic, he was EMT. And the things that I call him out on is like, the medicine wasn't the problem. Well, you know, it's like, no, you made the situation worse because I didn't say it then this way, but now my words are, you didn't ask what is best for the situation. What was best for the situation was like, I got you, Laverne. I understand that you're having a hard time with your daughter right now. Because this is a real call. They were panic attacking. They were going crazy. And he's just doing the medicine. He's just stern, no connection. Da, da, da. And I'm like, well, I don't care about her daughter. I said, no, crap. Sherlock, none of us care about our daughter. We don't know her daughter, but she cares about her daughter. What she really cares about is having somebody say, it's okay, and I hear you. And that's all you had to do in this situation, and it would have brought the situation down. And it did, because I stepped in. I started engaging on that level. And Jerome Moore throws in here. Jerome is amazing. Jerome, I need to get you on the Second Opinion show, and let's talk about stuff. He says, lead by example, make adjustments if it's not going to hurt anyone or go against protocol. Hopefully, by leading by example, the new EMT or paramedic will follow. And that requires them to pay attention. Because he's right. And I've led by example. What I've learned is to go, yes, and take that. What was best for the situation? What really can get the result that you want? And the problem is we never, as human beings, that student that you're discussing, right? Your leader. I dare say you yourself, because I know I've done it myself. When we don't go with intent, we don't go in going, what are we going to do with this call? What are we going to do once we find, okay, I found the problem. What's my intent? What am I going to do to solve the overall situation? Then we're just as bad, right? We're going in with, facts. We're reacting out of experience instead of leading with intent going, what are we going to do?
Facts. I had a young lady call, I had a medic call into our hospital, call a patient report about a kid. And so the child was of a certain age, and she gave me a respiratory rate that made absolutely no sense. So my response to her was, if that 9-month-old is breathing 16 times a minute, are you prepared to start bagging, ventilating, and preparing to intubate? Because that child is 9 months old. And she's like, well, his breathing is, I said, okay, take your hand, put it on his belly, count for 15 seconds of respirations. So she did. So she came back with another number, and I said, now multiply that by 4, and that's going to give us a respiratory rate in the 60s. That is what I'm expecting to hear for a child that is in respiratory distress at that age. Always, you can't eyeball, we all have done it. Eyeball
the visual vitals. Yeah. Rate.
Yeah. We've done that for adults. Yeah. And in ANO times 4, GCS 15, finger cut. I'm not saying that it's all right, but we've all done it.
Sure.
However, you can never do that in a pediatric patient. And so when she got there, I explained that to her. I even took my my card off my badge and gave it to her, because we have a vital signs card that we keep, and gave it to her. I was like, this should be your Bible when it comes to pediatrics. This tells you everything that you need to know. And she was grateful for that. And I'm thinking, well, at this role at the hospital, I'm not in a teaching capacity, but as a medic and as an EMS instructor up to where I am now, I'm always going to have a teachable moment for somebody. Likewise, though, I always embrace teachable moments, because there are things that people still teach me about things. And I find that amazing. But in that, not the fear piece, but the humility, I've had to learn, I'm not always right. And my humility came in as a paramedic, because there was nothing you could tell me about an adult.
Right.
I got that adult stuff memorized. Kiva to kiva, cover to cover, front to back, in and out. walk into a room. Oh, he needs this, 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 and this, and that. I pop a quick vital sign. Usually I'm right. What humility that slapped me in the face was a child, a baby. That humility slaps you in the face. Fortunately for me, it wasn't a slap that slapped me off the stool. It was a slap that stunned me, and I had to shake my head a little bit. I had to regroup and then realize, yeah, okay, I hear you. I gotcha. And I wish that people would have more of those aha moments. I know people that have worked a whole career and never had that aha moment, because they've always been told or led to believe that they're the greatest thing since sliced bread. And now we're faced with us being the old heads, and these kids now coming out, I know how to do that. I know how to do that. And as much as you want to tell them that humility is going to knock you off your pedestal, they're not hearing that.
Yeah.
Fortunately, they don't learn until it happens. But hell, I didn't learn until it happened too. So,
and timing is everything, as we wrap this up here, of you only have students for so long in your life, and it depends on where they are in their life and where you are in yours, and those connections and the teachable moments. I have a student right now. I tried 2 programs to build something that I know on paper, this will change the industry. companies doing their own EMTR stuff, and both classes have failed because what I failed to take into account is that timing of people. And I get this one kid who can't pass the easiest test there is, and he keeps overthinking because, oh, I can only say so much. I can only try to show different ways, take you by the hand, let me help you, get you through things. But at the end of the day, it is on you. It's on you to change the conversation, to pass that test, to internalize everything and go, am I right? Am I the end all be all? Actually, that's not even the wrong question. It's what is the solution to get what I want? What do I want? Define it first. How do I get to that? And don't let anybody else tell you otherwise. So that's kind of my parting thought today of on this topic of, it's a different generation out there. Yeah, but no, because the old school that led us was like, these kids these days. And we did flip it. We flipped it from parents just don't understand too. These kids, we got to take everything individually, and we have to ask, what is, I heard this one time. I'll leave it with this. I heard this about Oprah Winfrey, who's one of my heroes out there. She doesn't do everything right, but I think she's changed the world. She has very quick meetings. She does not do hour-long meetings. She has very quick meetings, and she requires you, if you're going to be in a meeting with her, to have, this is what we're going to do and why, and then hit it and get it done, and no extraneous stuff. We need to take that example with everything, every interaction that we have with patients, with students, with the public, with nurses, with whoever, go, what do I want out of this interaction? And what do I see that when we get it? How do I know we get it? How do I keep it on that target? And how do I just walk away going, now I got to imagine Oprah Winfrey has probably walked away from me. He's like, nope, we're done. We hit this point. She keep going off. I'm out of here, you know? And that's not a negative. It's how do we be protected? And I'm not great at that. I'm working on that. So, you know, that's what I want to leave everybody with, is whose responsibility in the communication? I've heard the quote. I don't remember who said it. The quote is, in communication, it's the responsibility of the person who it's most important to work on it. So if it's most important to you, Laverne, to hear it, you've got to work on how to hear it differently. If it's most important to me to get my message across, I got to work on how to communicate differently. Yeah. You know, and that's where we are. All of our social media is We Are One EMS. Check that out. Putting stuff out on TikTok. Use a hashtag if you want to share this video, share this podcast. Hashtag We Are One EMS. Get it out there. We're all about the discussions and the mindsets and how we can find that common ground and come together. So if you'd like to be on the show, hit me up, info@oneems.com. And I believe on oneems.com, there's a button there that you can hit just to email me. I'd love to have you on. We'll talk about a topic. I also have a different show that I do called The Assessment that we have three or four people on that we throw out a thing of, hey, how do we get through to kids these days? You know, and have different topics. Actually, the next one I want to do, I want to get three or four people on to discuss, is legal weed and how it's going to affect our industry. And I'd love to openly, you know, work on that one and see the different opinions on it and, you know, just the ideas there. So, and that's what kind of a game show is. It's done in rounds. It's so many questions, and we narrow it down to a hard topic. So all that being said, thank you, Laverne, for being on. I am definitely going to have you on again. And I look for, well, no, you're not, I don't think you're going to this next conference in October. So I will see you when we put together our conferences and our ways of doing things, and yeah, be the difference you want to see in the world.
Absolutely. Be the difference you want to see. I love that.
Until next time, get out there and don't be afraid to share your thoughts, but don't be afraid to hear somebody else's thoughts and think how you can do things differently. I appreciate everybody. Be safe out there.
Thank you.